Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts.
Hey, everybody, I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring important conversations with the unafraid, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. These are challenging times. Amplifying diverse voices is needed now more than ever. As you know, my book, Fearless Girls with Dreams, Women with Vision, continues to inspire. It features 80 unique women's true stories from Canada and beyond. And I thank you all for your support in making it a bestseller in Canada. You can find it at your favorite local bookstore, as well as in-store at Costco, online at Amazon, Indigo, Target, Barnes & Noble. And if they don't have it, ask for it. Now, reminder, I love hearing from you. So send me an email at fearlesswomenpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram. And you know what? Tell your friends too. Love our community to grow. Thank you for tuning in from across Canada and so many other countries like Australia, UK, Mexico, and many more places, including the USA. I'm very excited to welcome my impressive guest who joins us from Atlanta, Georgia. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Nadia Theodore is the Consul General of Canada in Atlanta. She has been in this role since 2017. She joined the Canadian Civil Service in the summer of 2000, and she has a Bachelor of Laws from the University of London and a Master's in Political Science from Carleton University. She is a trade policy expert. She's an active volunteer with an incredibly impressive bio. We have so much to talk about. Welcome to the show, Nadia Theodore.
Thank you, Janice. I'm excited to be here.
So excited. Lots to talk about. But hey, first up, you're a Black woman currently living in the USA in an important role. You're representing Canada in Atlanta. Tell us about your experiences right now during these important and challenging times.
Yeah. So, you know, Janice, I am going to take off my diplomat hat and just be completely honest and transparent. It has been difficult. You know, I think that all of us listening can relate to the fact that no matter what we do in our lives for our work, we cannot remove who we are. And you yourself, Janice, talk a lot about authentic leadership and the importance of being fearless leaders. And part of that for me is really allowing myself the grace to be who I am, which is indeed a Black woman who is living in a time and representing Canada in a fairly important role in a time that is difficult, not just here in America, but home in Canada and around the world. And so it's had its challenges, and I've had to remember to give myself some grace and to remember to rest and find moments of joy where I can.
Tell us more.
I think that it is a layered experience. So I came to Atlanta in 2017. It was my first time living in the United States, although I had traveled extensively. Born and raised in Ottawa, Canada. And, you know, for many people, the events surrounding the deaths of George Floyd and many others have started a conversation around race and equity and power across America and now in Canada. But for Black people and allies, this is a conversation that has been going on for a very long time. And so I think that for many of us, and Black women in particular, it has been a period of several weeks where the attention from everybody now has become a lot. While, you know, we are very happy to see everybody paying attention to something that is quite important, and while we are hopeful that the attention translates into real action and change, it is also reality that many people are looking to quickly do something and to understand what is happening in order for them to do something in their organizations and even at home. And so they turn to Black people, and most often to Black women, to help them navigate the space, to help them understand, you know, what being an ally means, what being anti-racist means, where the materials are, how they can learn about it. And that is, you know, that's tiring. Tiring as we try and go about doing our daily jobs, taking care of our families, trying not to catch COVID, paying our bills, right. You know, all of the things that we all need to do. Layered on top of that now is, for many of us, a sense of responsibility, however ill-placed, of having to teach people about the experiences that we have lived our entire lives.
And yeah, I saw Marcy Ian from the Social TV was talking about her experiences of being, and you touched on it, Natty, of being so tired, and yet at the same time, in her case, not being able to sleep, you know, and so stressed. And it's to your point around the attention and this responsibility. And how do you feel about like the actual, you know, there's a moment and there's a groundswell. So do you feel like we have to push even harder now?
Yeah, you know, and Marcy Ian, who's my friend in my head, said it so beautifully.
Yeah. Yeah.
She said it so beautifully, right? That she is tired, mm-hmm. but she refuses to rest. Because for her, and everybody is different and everybody should be able to do it differently, I think. For her, she has decided that now is really the time, as you said, Janice, to push forward and to do her part to make sure that this conversation doesn't stop at performative action and performative allyship, but real systemic change and sharing of power.
Mm-hmm. And lasting change.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I, that resonates with me. I don't know if it's the same level of exhaustion as Marcy, but I definitely feel a certain level of exhaustion indeed. But at the same time, wanting to make sure that I do my part to affect change and to demonstrate, in my case, to demonstrate to the people coming up behind me, to those young Black women who want to see themselves in positions of power and influence, to show them that that dream is possible. So, yeah.
Beautiful. It's not only possible, it's so necessary. We need it.
Indeed.
Right? We need voices and perspectives that are unique and diverse. We know we need this.
Indeed. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. What do we have wrong and what do we have right about diversity and inclusion and equity and justice? And I know that's a big, hairy question, but you know, what's, in your view, what do we have right? What do we have wrong?
You know, I think that what we have right in Canada is the ability to look around us at our neighbors to the south, you know, our big cousins mm-hmm. to the south, and even other places around the world, and learn from those experiences. I think that Canada has always been a country that is able to think globally. And I think that that helps us in looking to how things are unfolding in other countries and being able to take those experiences and convert them into a Canadian experience and a Canadian way of doing better. So I think we have that right. The fact that the murders of George Floyd and many others in the United States is what has galvanized Canadians, Black Canadians in particular, to start talking about their experiences is evidence of that. What I think that we have wrong is, you know, that good old Canadian politeness and that good old Canadian niceness, which, you know, I love, you know, I get that. But I think that when we talk about equity and diversity and inclusion, it prevents us from having the hard conversations that are frankly very necessary in order to move forward. You know, if we're not actually willing to call out what this is and listen to people's experiences and sit in our uncomfortableness, we will not be going forward. There's no way to change. There's no way to make change if you can't even acknowledge what the problem is, right? And I think that in Canada, that is our biggest problem. That is our biggest problem.
Do we have a sort of smugness that might be holding us back and thinking that there's not really a problem here?
Indeed. Listen, I think that, you know, part of being Canadian is always kind of looking to our, again, big cousins down south in the United States and saying, well, you know, at least we're not them. It could be worse.
Right. And we got our own problems.
Yeah, I mean, really and truly, right? I mean, I hear people say that all the time. And I think that is a mistake, if I do say so myself. I think that is a mistake, and I think that it is dangerous, really, because I think that what we have seen in the United States, but certainly in Canada, is the beginning of people who have for so long kept these experiences and these realities and these setbacks to themselves, and now they're tired of doing that, right?
And angry.
Tired and angry. And I think that, you know, it behooves us to take that seriously so that we do not go down a path that is worse than where we are now. I think that, you know, Canada has an opportunity to change course and be the leaders, right? Be global leaders in how to actually become anti-racist and how to truly create tables that are equitable and that are power sharing. And we can be a model for the world if we actually dig down, roll up our sleeves, and start doing the work.
So Maya Angelou once said, "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." Does this resonate with you, Nadia?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes, you know, and I think that it is so true on so many different levels. And, you know, when you go back to this conversation about diversity and equity and more importantly, inclusion, what we're hearing from people now is that much of the racism and discrimination that they have experienced is hard to quantify, right? It's not about sometimes it is, but very seldom is it people calling them the N-word or blatantly saying, "I'm not giving you this job because you're Black or because you're Indigenous," or, right? Often it is more insidious, more implicit, and it is about the way that people make you feel.
And more destructive.
And the way that people make you feel, exactly that, Janice, the way that people make you feel on an everyday, day-to-day basis while you're going to work, while you're taking your kids to school, while you're trying to do your shopping, is indeed over time more destructive. And that's why we call them microaggressions, right? Because it is these micro fissures that happen daily that add up to really be very destructive. Indeed, you said it exactly right.
It's that word belonging too.
Yes. Yes. That's right. The word belonging. And who gets to decide that you belong, right? Going back to this idea of power structures and the idea of sharing power. You know, who is it that gets to decide that you all of a sudden, you know, are privileged to get a seat at the table or privileged to belong? These conversations are important.
Yeah, sorry to jump in there, Natty. And even decides who decides?
Exactly. 100%. No, but honestly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is why if you are, you know, I like Twitter. So if you're listening to people who do this, who have been doing this for decades, and what they're putting out on Twitter, and if you read their books and their papers, you know, they say that it is indeed layered. It's not just about hiring, you know, five new Black executives or one new Black executive or, you know, whatever the case may be, or starting a pipeline. It is about all of those layers of conversations about who holds the power and who gets to decide that is really going to move us forward. And I really do truly believe that Canada can lead the way in making that change happen. I really do.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think it's a beautiful, exciting, and a big opportunity.
Exactly.
So now a male's perspective, William Faulkner once said, "You can't swim to new horizons until you have the courage to lose sight of the shore." We hear your fearlessness in everything you say, but tell us about a particular time you were fearless.
So I would say that the time that I keep on going back to in my head, whenever I'm trying to make a big move or do something that I'm scared of doing, I take myself back to the year that I decided to leave my job, leave the master's program that I was in, and take 8 months and go on this exchange program to Mexico. Didn't
fun.
Speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Fun. Yeah, but didn't speak Spanish. Had to learn that.
Learned that in 8 months?
I learned it 8 months before I left. Yep. So the language training was 8 months. And then I went for 8 months.
Wow.
And
amazing.
Yeah. And I was living with a host family in a small town outside of Toluca, Mexico, which is, you know, outside of Mexico City. So the small town was called San Antonio de la Isla. And I lived with a family. Like, you could walk from one end of the town to the other and, you know, in less than a couple hours.
Yeah.
My mom had died the year before, and I was, you know, grieving that.
Oh, yes.
And needed a change and was scared as all get out. But I packed my bags and kind of said to my dad, yeah, I'm going to go to Mexico for 8 months to live with this family. Yeah, who I can't really communicate with. You know, but don't worry. It's going to be all good. And, you know, thinking back on it now, that was, to me, being fearless. You know, many, many young adults go on these trips and these exchanges for sure. So it's not unique. But for me, it represented a period of fearlessness because I kind of decided to push away, A, the grief that I was experiencing because of my mom's death, sudden death. Two, the expectation that people had for me that, you know, I was going to finish this master's program and continue my career in the public service and kind of get that done. And I just decided, you know what, I'm taking a pause and I'm going to do this. And I'm not sure, you know, exactly why I'm doing it or what it's going to lead to, but I'm just doing it because I need a change. And that sentiment, this idea of being courageous enough that even if all of the pieces don't fit together in your mind, and even though it might not represent a perfect part of your five-year plan, so to speak, mm-hmm. that when you have this gut feeling that you need to do something different, having the courage to actually just do it is something that has guided me going forward in my life.
Mm, that's very inspiring. Take us back to your 10-year-old self. You grew up in Ottawa, Canada. What were you into? Share some of your experiences from that time.
Yeah, I was into reading and writing. I wanted to be an author when I was like 10, 11, 12. Mm-hmm. And I was very much into proving to my parents that I knew a lot and was very committed to democracy and justice. Like, I was meant to be a lawyer. I mean, I didn't end up becoming a lawyer, but that's why I went to law school for sure, because I was committed from the age of like 8, 9, 10 to this idea of justice and democracy. And I'll give you an example. So mm-hmm. when I was a young teenager, both of my parents were born and raised in a small island called St. Lucia. They immigrated to Canada in the 60s and set up their family and had three kids. And so, you know, we came from, in West Indian terms, a fairly liberal family, but certainly in Canadian terms, you know, fairly strict. So sleepovers, not a thing. you know, going out to parties with friends just because, not really a thing. You know, so there was this party, okay, that I really wanted to go to, and it was going to be the party of the year. It was going to solidify myself as like the preteen popular kid that I really wanted to be. I was probably about 12, I think. I can't remember exactly how old I was. Mm-hmm. My parents said no, of course.
Yeah.
And I decided that this was an affront to democracy, justice, and everything that should be right in the world. And so I created a petition about why I should be allowed to go to this party and how my household was not a democracy and how horrible that was. And I went around the neighborhood and got signatures to my petition and presented it to my parents as, you know, evidence that they should let me go gallivanting around at will. You know, of course they didn't allow me to go to the party, but they did. My dad says to me now, you know, Nadia, it was at that moment that I knew that you were going to do something good with your life, because any kid that, you know, feels so committed to something as, in his mind, silly as a party, and can go around collecting signatures and then actually present it to their parents. Yeah, that kid's going to be okay.
Yeah.
They're going to be okay.
Yeah, we don't need to worry. Exactly. So that's a beautiful story. You continue to inspire and to do great things. You love to volunteer with Habitat for Humanity. You're involved with Atlanta's Everybody Wins. First of all, tell us what that organization does. And then why do you give your time?
Yeah, so Everybody Wins is a fantastic organization that I was actually introduced to by fellow Canadians here in Atlanta. So Brooks Robinson and his wife, Jen, who are Canadian from Toronto, but live and work here in Atlanta now. And when I first arrived, you know, they welcomed me. Our offices are in the same building. And I was saying to Jen how I really wanted to jump into volunteering as quickly as possible, because it's important to me. And she introduced me to Everybody Wins, which is an organization that goes into schools and pairs you with one student who you follow throughout grades 2 to grades 5. Oh. And you read with them an hour every week. So you go to their school one day a week and read to them and help them and improve their literacy skills. And so, you know, for me, volunteering is really a way for me to remember why I enjoy public service. Because I think that sometimes when you're caught up in the day-to-day of your job and the bureaucracy of your job, whether you know, and bureaucracy exists everywhere, you know, even in private sector. It's hard to remember why you're in it. What drives you to excellence in your job? And for me, getting out into the community really reminds me of that. So when I'm at the school with my student, her name is Kenya, and we're reading and she's talking to me about, you know, her dreams or what she wants to, you know, be when she grows up, and I'm telling her what I do and explaining to her what that means in practice. And to me, it reminds me that, oh yeah, the idea of public service for me is about serving. At the end of the day, it's about showing people, especially young people that look like me, what the possibilities can be for their life. And it's about, especially in the role that I'm in now, it's about demonstrating what Canada, what the best of Canada can mean around the world. And yeah, at the end of the day, it's about people, right? It's about me being with Kenya and showing her what is possible. It's about me, you know, helping to build a Habitat for Humanity home, which then provides the start of generational wealth for a family, and showing them that that's possible. So yeah, kind of self-serving in the end, if you think about it, really. I always say, and people say this all the time, I know, but it's, I find it to be true, that you get more out of volunteering than you give, frankly. I get more out of it 100% than I give.
I think it's a great takeaway for everybody listening, is the values-led choices in terms of which organizations you give to, because there's so many deserving ones. But I think it even gives you even greater meaning and fulfillment when you link it so directly to your values.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So as a Black woman and a leader and someone so successful in their career, certainly you're going to face criticism. How have you handled it? Any tips for others as they continue on, you know, being who they want to be and chasing their dreams?
You really have to be careful who you give your energy to, because if you decide to give energy and weight to everybody who has a criticism about you as a woman, as a Black woman, as a racialized woman, you will soon realize that some of that criticism has nothing to do with wanting you to be better and wanting you to succeed, and has a lot to do with wanting you to feel small, wanting you to not take up space, and wanting you to feel less than and undeserving. And it is really important for people and you know, for everybody listening, especially if there are younger women listeners on the come up, you know, it is really important for you to get centered and to be very intentional about who you decide to listen to, what advice you decide to listen to, and who you go to for advice in order to truly get the feedback that you need to succeed and do better, as opposed to feedback and advice that is all about wanting you to shrink and not go further.
I can't remember the actor who said this quote, but when asked what was some of the best advice that he had ever received, he said, and I found it very liberating, never take criticism from someone you wouldn't go to for advice.
Yes, I can't remember. Yes, I heard that. That's exactly. I can't remember who said that, but we're going to look that up when we're done. Right?
Exactly.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you have to really think hard. Would I actually take advice from this person?
Right.
You know, am I taking advice from this person just because they're my superior, or they're somebody that everybody says is fantastic and I should be taking advice from them? You know, you hit the nail on the head, Janice. That's exactly, that would be my one advice, 100%.
What's some other advice for ambitious women who want to get ahead?
you know, my other piece of advice to people, and it's kind of related, is to shoot your shot. You know, my friend Trey Anthony, who's also a Canadian writer and playwright and comedian who now lives in Atlanta, half of her time in Atlanta, half of her time in Toronto, says that all the time. And she just did a great, you should follow her on Instagram, Black Girl in Love. She just did a great Instagram story on this. Shoot your shot. You know, oftentimes as women, we hold ourselves back and we overthink things and we try and please everybody and look at all of the angles. And, you know, by the end of the day, the moment or the opportunity has passed us, or we have talked ourselves out of it, or allowed somebody else to talk ourselves out of it. And I would just say to people, ambitious women, to shoot your shot and go for what you want. Ask for what you want, for what you want, not what other people think that they want for you.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that you are the designer of your own life, right? And so ambition should look the way that you want it to look like, not the way that others might have designed it for you, which I think that as A-type personalities, you know, people always think that A-type personalities are ones that are, you know, go-getters and always doing more and more and more and wanting to succeed at everything. And that's all true. But I think that another character trait of A-type personalities is this idea of wanting to be liked, right? And wanting to please and wanting to be the number one at something, which often requires you to be liked and have people around you that like you and support you. And that's all great, but not at the expense of designing your own life and defining success and ambition in the way that you want it to look like.
Your own definition. And it can change too. It doesn't have to go stagnant. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is so important in my view, Janice. Absolutely. Mm. It can change. So you might have decided for the last 15 years that, you know, you wanted to be a public servant, a diplomat. And then you can decide one day that that is no longer what you want to do, right? Or you want to try something else, or, you know, absolutely. And I think that that's part of going back to what we talked about at the top, this idea of being courageous and fearless, having that courage to say, you know what, I know that this is what I've been doing and this is the trajectory that people see me on, but I'm pivoting.
What about kindness? How has kindness played out in your career?
Yeah, so I have mixed feelings about the word kindness. So I suffer. So I'm a middle child. I'm a woman. I'm a Black woman. And so I suffer from people-pleasing syndrome to no end. Mm-hmm. And my mom was a very religious woman. She went to church every day of her life, noon mass every day, volunteered in our community, taught each and every one of her children that to be kind and to be of service to others is the number one thing that you should strive to in life. If you do nothing else, you should be kind. And so that's the way that I was brought up, and that's who I have become as a person. And I think that anybody who knows me would verify that. I really do believe that being kind and open and authentic and giving your time to people and being empathetic is really important. The other side of that coin, however, is that when you prioritize kindness and empathy, if you are not careful, you begin to prioritize other people's happiness and other people's comfort over your own. And so there is a balance there, right? So, you know, you have to be kind to yourself first, maybe, should be the rule. before you can, you know, the old saying, put on your own oxygen mask first before you put on yours, right?
You can't have to save somebody if you're, you know, exactly. You got to have that oxygen first. Absolutely.
Exactly. So you have to be kind to yourself first. You have to give yourself time to rest, to find joy, to take care of yourself, your family, your career. And then you can, you know, then you can take care of others. And I think that that's a balance that I have, that I've been working on. My colleague in the office who helps me manage my calendar and you know, keeps me organized, Monica, she always says to me, Nadia, the kindness is going to kill you. You need to just, you need to not say yes to everything, and you need to make sure you take time for yourself. So shout out to Monica, who is always reminding me that kindness is good, but you do have to remember to take care of yourself as well.
So wise words, Nadia, by the way. So for what are you reading right now? And for those of us that want to learn more, what can you recommend?
Yeah, so I love books and reading. And so I could go on and on and on about the book lists, but I have been rereading a few of my favorites. So I just started rereading Ishmael Bea's new book called Little Family, which I would highly recommend. I have also started to reread a book called The Prosperity Paradox by Afosa Ajomo and Clayton Christensen, which many of your listeners might be familiar with Clayton Christensen. And it's all about how innovation can lift countries out of poverty. A fantastic book for anybody who's interested in what some people call development economics and how we change the course of poverty, not just in developing countries, but even within our own country in Canada. And how innovation can be a push for that. So I would highly recommend that. I'm also rereading a book called The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson. And it is the story of the migration of Black Americans who fled the South for northern cities. And it's fantastic. And I think that, you know, a lot of people have on their book list now white fragility, which is all, you know, which is about how you sort of lean in to the uncomfortableness of your white privilege. But I would recommend The Warmth of Other Suns to really get firsthand experiences and accounts of the lived experiences of Black Americans, for sure. But I think that it's applicable to everybody and their migration from the South to the North and why that happened and the economics of why that happened.
We've got a long list of very good reading suggestions. This is amazing, Nadia. Thank you. Now, finally, your big question, the final question, what, Nadia, is your dream for Canada and the world?
My dream for Canada and the world is that we commit ourselves to being better than just good enough. My hope for Canada is that we are able to lean into this period of uncomfortableness and really become global leaders for what true equity and power sharing within a country can look like. That's my hope. That's my dream.
That's a beautiful dream for Canada and for the world. You've been listening to Nadia Theodore. She's the Consul General of Canada in Atlanta. She is making us so proud. Thank you so much, Nadia, for joining us today on the Fearless Women podcast.
Thank you so much, Janice, for having me.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Thanks again to our amazing sponsors, BDC, Lockheed Martin, and Export Development Canada. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to Export Development Canada, the international risk experts, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. Supporting Canadian companies of all sizes succeed on the world stage, EDC takes your worries away and helps you grow your business with confidence. When your business has no borders, neither does your potential. Find out more at edc.ca/womenintrade. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.